Hello and welcome to episode 57 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
And I'm Craig. And that's it this week, because that's Ben and Tank are both away.
It's another twofer. This is actually my first twofer for the podcast, so I'm mildly nervous.
No, you and I have done one before, I'm sure of it.
No, I'm pretty sure it's just been you and Ben. Whenever it's been a twofer, or Ben and Tank have done one too. But I have never done a twofer.
Oh, sure, you and I had done one. Oh, well, never mind. It'll be fine.
I'm not worried about it. Fun adventure. So I hear you have some new tech this week.
Yes, I do. I asked in the Slack the other day about what people's thoughts were about what I should do. I'm coming out to my 2-year plan renewal on my phone. So I don't buy the phones outright. I just go on a monthly plan thing. Mm-hmm. And so I always upgrade. I generally just upgrade to whatever the latest phone is. And in the past, I've always just gone with the 16 gig and then got a decent data plan with it. So I'm sort of paying more for the service than for the phone. Mm-hmm. And just cop a little bit of annoyance with not having much storage at all. But this time I was kind of going, it was going to work out exactly the same price to get an iPhone 7, the base model, like the 32 gig iPhone 7.
Yeah.
Or to get a 64 gig iPhone 6S. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to work out the difference, like what I would prefer to have that amount of storage, like 4 times what I've had before or 2 times what I've had before on a faster phone with a better camera, essentially. A lot of people say go for the storage, and I very nearly did. Uh-huh. Until I read a bit more in detail about, you know, David McCookie was talking about it as well, like the fact that there's an extra full stop of exposure in the camera. I think you mentioned there's a stabilization feature that's better than, or has been introduced. And it's got 6-element lens instead of 5. So they've just improved the overall build of that. And I don't take a lot of selfies, but I do a bit of landscape and slow shutter and stuff, iPhone photography, as a bit of a hobby from my other photography. So, I'd sort of thought it was worth. Plus, at the moment, I'm taking a lot of baby pictures.
Yes.
So I kind of was like, that's probably worth it. Plus, I have the latest and greatest for a short period of time. And 32 gig is still double the storage that I've been used to. So,
yes, I was going to ask you about that. Have you really been living with 16 gigabytes all this time?
I have.
How has that been? It's like you're on an island with only...
I think because it's all I've known, I don't have anything to compare it with.
Yeah, that does help.
I've had like probably, two, if I didn't have them in folders, I've probably had 3 screens worth of apps. And that's been enough. Like, I've had all the apps I need. Mm-hmm. So the storage issues come for music, photos, and podcasts.
Yeah.
So currently on my old phone, which I still have around, there's something like, you know, I can maybe fit, I think at one stage I had like 1,000 photos on there, like 700 photos or something. Wow. I think the most I've ever had on there was 1,200, but that's kind of pushing the upper limit of storage. And then when you start adding music and podcasts, so on my playlist, like on my music, I was only able to have, say, the 5 most... Like, the 5 albums that I really wanted to listen to at a time. Like, and so, if I wanted other music, I either had to take one of my old phones. Like, I've got an iPhone 4 that's still alive that I can use purely as an iPod, essentially.
That's impressive.
So, it's got no data or anything, but it can hold music. But it just means carrying an extra thing in the car with me when I go driving or whatever. So, it's good to now have the 32 and to be able to have, and particularly also with podcasts, because I do... the commute, like the hour and a half commute in and out. So 3 hours a day of driving, essentially, to be able to store more podcasts without it saying, can't fit this one on your phone because there's no storage space.
Yeah. If you're used to 16 gigabytes, 32 is going to be a huge, huge improvement. So,
So, I mean, I totally understand the argument for get as much storage as you can because storage is really important. Mm-hmm. And I, like I said, I very nearly was tempted in that direction. But I just thought, you know what, double what I've had before. Like, I think if I had four times what I'd had before, mm-hmm. I'd just put my whole music library on there, or not quite, but a lot more of it.
Uh-huh.
And in reality, I actually find that when I do that, like, I had that on one of my old iPods.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've got so many CDs and iTunes albums and stuff. It just becomes, like, too much choice.
Yeah.
And I never know what I want to listen to. And then I put it on shuffle, but shuffle kind of irritates me. I'm one of those people who...
Then you get the Christmas albums coming up randomly and, like...
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't want to... There's almost a little bit of stress or nervousness, like, what's going to come next and am I going to like it?
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? Am I going to like it in the sequence? I've just been listening to this and now I'm going to listen to something completely different. So,
mm-hmm.
not real stress, obviously, but usually I just prefer to work through an album rather than to grab songs from all different genres and try and make them work together one after the other.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, that's been fun. It's cool. It's a cool phone. It's got, thankfully, in the 32 gig, there's not even an option to get the jet black fingerprint central model. It's only the matte black or the silver or the whatever other options are, gold.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be disappointed to know I didn't get the gold and I did get the matte black.
Oh, I would have totally gone for the black too. That's a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's cool. The lack of home button is kind of weird, but I think the thing that's making me feel like it's not that weird is because I've got the fourth gen Apple TV,
mm-hmm.
and the remote has the same kind of button that's not a button type mm-hmm. deal.
I don't think that's Taptic though on the remote, on the Apple TV remote.
No. But like, no, it's not. But it's like the old home button.
It's like the trackpad thing. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a trackpad area and you just click the whole area mm-hmm. and it's just a single, and it's not like a... It is a click, but it's not like with the home button, you actually felt like you were pressing a button. Whereas it's a bit more of a subdued click, I think.
Yeah, I played with it in an Apple store a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, I really like that feel of that button. It's pretty cool.
And you can customize it like there's three different levels in the settings of how clicky it is, if that makes sense, like how much of a distinct
mm-hmm.
sound or feel that it makes when you press it down. I think I've got it on the second one, which is the default, which is kind of, you do know that you've clicked it, but it's definitely not like a pressing the old home button.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool. I like it.
Sweet. We just got some new technology past couple of weeks too. I bought my wife an iPad Pro for 14 days to try it out, because Apple is increasingly hesitant to release MacBooks, even though they should be releasing sometime this month, hopefully. But they haven't released like new MacBook Pros in, oh gosh, is it like a year and a half now or something? Like, it's a ridiculously long time. They haven't released new ones. And my wife has needed a laptop for a while. So I figured, let's try an iPad Pro. She loves doing art, and so I went the whole nine yards, got her the 12-inch iPad and pencil and like a keyboard and all that, just for us to try it out. And unfortunately, we are returning it, but it was a fun experiment. But tomorrow...
Why are you returning it?
Well, it's not a satisfying laptop replacement for her, and so that's basically...
Because there's no CD drive?
No, I'm pretty sure the new MacBook Pros aren't going to have CD drives either.
No, probably not. So what is the actual, like, what does she want to be able to do on a laptop that she can't do on an iPad?
It's mostly an issue with workflow. The workflow is completely different. And there are certain things that, like, it's websites are harder on a touch screen, are more difficult on a touch screen typically, because they're made for a computer with a pointer. Unless they're optimized for mobile, which in most cases is crap anyway. And so certain things, there are just a few, there are enough pain points that it's just not comfortable for her yet. I would love to get us a house iPad at some point, just for like a nice 9-inch that we all can use. Yeah, right.
So that means one that you can use that's not hers? Is that the idea?
No, all of it. Well, I could use hers too.
If my wife doesn't want one, we'll get a house one.
Exactly. But no, we will save up for whenever the laptop comes out. Whenever they finally freaking release laptops. But
Anyway. At least the other thing is, like, laptops will gen, I would say they probably last a bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking to you now over Skype on my 2009 model MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a perfect computer, but it's still, for its age, it's doing fine. Like, there's no major issues, really.
Definitely.
Now that I've upgraded the operating system, it's actually running pretty well. So, yeah, whereas an iPad, you know, it's kind of one generation thing, and then you sort of really start to notice the slowness and those kinds of things creeping in.
Yeah, yeah.
So
now, the thing, we've decided that we need some kind of a drawing, something, tablet, something for the house. And whether that's an iPad down the road or something else would be the question. Now, I've heard from most people that I've heard talk about the iPad is that there's nothing comparable to what the iPad and the Pencil can do on the market, that it's just fantastic. So I'm going to poll the Tech Reformation audience about, are there decent drawing tablets out there that are cheap or inexpensive or something that we could play around with that we wouldn't, you know, that's worth the money? I'm looking at you guys over there at Helvetic, a podcast. I know you guys are iPad guys, but I don't know if you've heard of other things that you'd use for design. But anyway, so that was our fun 14-day experiment before we return it.
So. Cool. Should we get into the news?
Indeed. This is Tech You Should Know, where we bring you a few tech news stories from the past week that we want to talk about. Amazon is taking its shot at the standalone music streaming service business this week with Amazon Music Unlimited, a competitor to Spotify and Apple Music. There are several ways to subscribe. There's the standard $9.99 a month for non-Prime members, $7.99 a month for Prime members, and a 4 Echo plan that's only $3.99 a month if you just want to listen on your Amazon Echo. If Amazon being in the streaming music business sounds familiar, they have taken a soft shot at this before with access to Amazon Music for all Prime members, but that had a much smaller catalog than Amazon Music Unlimited, which is unlimited, I suppose. So, another service in the market.
I don't know what to say about that. Yeah, another one out there, I guess, people can use.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't use any of these streaming services. I've never signed up for Apple Music. I used Spotify when it first was really new, but I just didn't stick with it for some reason. I don't think I quite understood or sort of used it often enough to really see a need for it in my
mm-hmm.
workflow and what I was doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Streaming music, I guess I was like, when would I actually stream music? You know, most of the time when I'm wanting to listen to music, it's because I'm driving or something. And I don't want to be streaming for long periods of time through my mobile data.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I used Amazon. Well, I got the three month trial for Apple Music and it was fine. It was fine. We enjoyed it, but it's one of those things that I can't justify paying however much it is. And I guess $9.99 a month for that ability to stream stuff. And the $3.99 thing for just people who have an Amazon Echo is interesting though, because that's a reasonable amount a month if you just have like a house speaker that everyone says, "Hey, Alexa." Sorry for everyone who has Echoes that are listening to this on their Echo right now that I just made go crazy. that I think is interesting. That's a per device plan for music streaming. Is if you only have one device, anyway.
And so the idea is that device just sits in your living room somewhere and stream. That's the only thing you can ever stream to, and you have to just take it with you somewhere if you want to.
Well, I mean, if. It may be people have like a Spotify account that they use, you know, going out about, I don't know, but you know, for people who want a cheaper streaming plan and they're home most of the time, then well, there you go.
Yeah. But essentially it's a portable speaker that is connected directly to the service.
Well, it's not a portable speaker. The Echo, well, there is a portable version of the Echo. Yeah. But it's supposed to be, the Echo is supposed to just be like a, an AI that sits in your house and you can do things. You can talk to it and do things with.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Sorry. I have next to no idea about Amazon products.
That's right.
It's Amazon. And
every time.
It's not that they're bad.
Every time I think about you and Amazon, I was like, I got to go check. Like, I have to go back to the Australian Amazon store just to see, like, no, it really is just like books there, like just Kindle books.
Yes. I think that's what it seems like to me. It's mostly books and DVDs, and I've bought a few things on it, but it's usually has been books or DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And when I bought stuff, when I tried to buy other stuff, the shipping costs and stuff from America are just too crazy. Yeah. I tried to get the same podcast mics as you guys, and it was going to work out to be way too expensive. So
yeah,
I ended up buying one on eBay instead.
Yep. Yep. It's crazy to me that they're not in Australia yet, but you know, whatever.
They're too busy building drones and, or you know, flying their drones around. And
yeah, right.
All that stuff.
We'll get over
sorting
to
out
eventually.
Their new methods of getting to market, getting things to customers.
Intel is weirdly officially entering the drone space with its own branded drone called the Falcon 8 Plus. Intel has tinkered around with drones before, to be sure, but this is their first fully branded drone, and it's for industrial applications, like field inspections where it might take human hours to walk or climb around to inspect various things. There's no real dominant drone maker in the commercial and industrial space yet, as opposed to the hobbyists who, there's tons of them, which that means Intel could take a foothold. But even if the drone itself doesn't take off, their depth sensor technology is advanced enough to be interesting to other drone makers.
Hmm. There you go. I didn't see that coming, but fair enough, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird. But, you know, I guess they have to find something now that they're starting to transition out of making... I forget what it was. Was it CPUs or just system on a chips? Or...
It looks... Yeah, something like that. It looks quite... I don't know. It doesn't look that sleek, I guess, is what I'm saying. Well, it looks quite just angular and, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It definitely looks industrial, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right, exactly. Definitely for industrial applications. I've actually wanted a drone personally for what we do, because we put solar panels on people's buildings, and then we have to take pictures of them, and it makes it very difficult to take pictures of solar panels on people's roofs. And drones would be fantastic for that, but I haven't been able to justify it to... my boss yet, so we will have to see if we can do that at some point.
This could be your answer.
That's right. We'll just get ourselves an Intel drone. Yahoo's not doing too well in the spotlight recently. We didn't get a chance to cover it here, but a few weeks ago, Yahoo announced that they were subject to a data breach in late 2014 that stole at least 500 million users' account information, including names, email addresses, telephone numbers, birth dates, hashed passwords, and some encrypted or unencrypted responses to security questions and answers. This is a catastrophic failure on Yahoo's part, and you should look into changing your password, deleting your data, and possibly just deleting your account if you have one. However, it's a little harder to do that right now because Yahoo inexplicably decided that now was the time to do maintenance on their auto-forwarding email feature. Yes, one of the simplest features that would help you migrate your email account elsewhere is down for maintenance over the period of time that Yahoo's users most want to leave. I will say that this seems coincidental, not purposeful based on the statements from Yahoo on this matter, but it's certainly in bad taste. Did you see that news at all?
Mm.
Craig.
I saw it come up in the Slack when you posted it there, and I was like, ooh, that's... you know, there have been plenty of businesses that... have had stuff like this happen and sort of recovered from it. This one sounded a little bit, I don't know. It sounds like they're trying to sort of just cover it over by.
That's basically what they did. Like, this was on the level of Marissa Meyer saying, who is the CEO of Yahoo, saying that this wasn't important enough to put a lot of resources towards. Like, and this happened in 2014 and they didn't let anyone know about it. And this is just
so that's the thing in these situations, like, transparency is the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you tell, like, when it happened to Adobe and they told everyone and everyone went, okay, we need to change our passwords and usernames and whatever, then you can take action, you can feel like you've done what you need to do to make the situation better. And it's still not a great thing to have happen, but at least you can take steps. If you don't even know that it's happened, and then when you find out they make it difficult for you to do what you want to do, which is maybe move off of their service.
Yeah, yeah.
That, I don't know. It just kind of seems like a strange way to keep customers happy. That's how I'd put it.
Yeah, yeah. I am. Have you even used Yahoo? Like, I think I was I was the post Yahoo generation of the internet users.
Except for Flickr. We used to use it for search. I used to use it for search back in the day when the internet first started up, and it was Google, Yahoo, or AltaVista were the three main search engines. And right at the beginning, I used to, for some reason, think Yahoo was cooler than Google. I think it just had a more, like, slightly better graphics or something. Or maybe I just liked the name Yahoo. It sounded fun. So I used to use it, but then I quickly realized that Google was giving me better results and things. Mm-hmm. And Yahoo was becoming, it seemed like there was more ads around the edges, and their design got less and less nice to look at and stuff. So
yeah.
And now, I don't know what it's like in America, but now Yahoo is, so one of our free-to-air TV stations in Australia is called Channel 7, and Yahoo in Australia is Yahoo 7, I'm pretty sure.
So interesting.
You go there and it's kind of like a, I mean, they've still got access to mail and search and whatever, I believe, but, and I'm kind of talking while I'm waiting for it to load because I don't actually use it very often. But, yeah, it's kind of like a hub for the TV station, if that
sense. That's like interesting. I know Hulu did a thing where they're partnering with Yahoo to, like, provide Hulu content on Yahoo. But, they've always kind of tried to do some of that TV stuff, which is interesting. But everything Yahoo feels – it feels like everything Yahoo does is kind of half-hearted. Doesn't quite cut it.
Yeah, I think Australia is, I don't know, again, I don't know, you know, like MSN?
Yeah, yep.
So, we have another one of our free-to-air channels is Channel 9, and so, if you go to their homepage, I'm pretty sure it's still the same, but it has been for a while, 9 MSN. So, Channel 9 is 9 MSN, and Channel 7 is Yahoo 7.
Interesting.
And it's kind of, yeah, so you kind of get, it's like a newsy website, like, you know, if you go to an online website for a newspaper or something where it's got different categories of news and stuff that you can search through.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of feel like those type of sites.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a shift away from just a standard search engine like Google.
Mm-hmm.
So into more of like a content provider hub, like come to us for your news and videos to watch and stuff like that. So anyway, yeah, I don't use it. And I think that this, what they've done is a bit of a strange PR exercise. I don't think, probably don't think it's going to work out as well as they hoped.
Yeah. Yeah. And in more news, hopefully final news, for the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 disaster Mageddon Gate, the phone and all replacement phones have been recalled by Samsung and the CSPC. If you have a replacement phone, you need to turn it in. It's over. There have been 96 battery issues reported in the U.S. alone since this whole mess started for Samsung, and the recall includes a total of 1.9 million devices.
Wow.
The CSPC recommends that consumers immediately stop using in PowerTown all Galaxy Note 7 devices, period.
Yeah, when I was in the phone store yesterday, I was at like my phone provider's shop getting my phone switched over. I noticed, like, on their Android wall, there was just a blank space where the Note 7 used to be. So, they still had the spot for it, but there was no device there. And I just said to the girl, how's that going, the lady who was serving me? And she just said, yeah, it was, as soon as it happened, we kind of all looked at each other and went, uh-oh. Like, it's just extra work for them, I guess, with people returning things.
Yeah.
Or needing to replace things and all that sort of stuff. So, pretty messy, really, in the long run. But at the end of the day, safety is number one. So,
yep.
Got to do what you got to do.
That's right. Have you seen the boxes that Samsung requires people to ship the phones back in? Like, they're engineered to be fire retardant.
Is that the cardboard one with the white inside that I'm looking at in this picture on the news article?
Yes, maybe. Let me see here.
Yeah, I've just pulled up the news article from TechCrunch, and it looks like that's the kind of thing. It's like a double-layered cardboard box.
That's right. And like with latex gloves and everything, like, because you can't touch the fire-retardant material because it'll irritate your skin. Like, this is intense. It's so crazy. Poor Samsung. They're going to have such a bad year financially. I wonder what the cultural fallout is.
Yeah, that's right. But like I said last week or whatever, they've got so many users on so many other products. It will hurt them, but they'll bounce back from it. It's not the end of Samsung, but it is the end of the Galaxy Note 7. And I think that's probably fair enough.
Yeah, for sure. And that's all the tech you should know this week. If we left out something you think we should have mentioned, email us at ask@techreformation.com. And for more tech you should know throughout the week, you can follow us on Twitter @TechReformation.
And that brings us into Tech You Should Use, the part of the show where we profile a particular technology that we find useful and that we think you might find useful too. And this week, I'm going to talk about an app. It seems like every time I do Tech You Should Use, pretty much, I do an app, but that's because they're so useful. This one is, I don't want to say anything sexist or anything like that, but I would venture to say that this one may be of more use to the female listener, or if you are a male listener and your wife, your lovely wife, chooses not to listen to tech podcasts, which is fine. Maybe you could just let her know about it. She might still find it useful. And hey, she might even start listening because sometimes we talk about things that she might... Oh, wow, this is getting bad. Anyway, I'm rambling. So, anyone, you know, any Tech Reformation listener can use this, but I think probably the mothers in the audience will find it most useful. It's called Awesome Baby Tracker, which I don't love the name, but...
hey, it's descriptive.
It is descriptive, and it is quite awesome, and it does track things, so it's very accurate as well. My wife's been using this pretty much since day one, I think, when our son was born back in at the end of May. And basically what it does is it lets you track anything and everything, and you might think, why would you want to do that? That's creepy. basically, particularly early on, like in the first couple of months, the doctors and nurses and midwives and everyone who do the checkups and things, want to know that they're gaining the right amount of weight and that they're, you know, they're getting some sleep, if not a lot. Obviously, not all babies sleep heaps, but they want to know that they're starting to do the right things and that, you know, even their toilet habits and stuff. Ben's going to love this bit, but even that stuff is starting to be regular and whatever. So, this lets you track a bunch of things. The main things we use it for is breastfeeding. So, my wife times the feeds and how long he takes per side, basically. And from that, you can obviously see when the last feed was started and therefore when he's likely to be due again for his next feed, which is quite useful. So, if we're going out somewhere, she can just pull up her phone and go, well, I fed him at this time. He's probably going to need to be fed at this time. And if it was 3 o'clock in the morning and you wouldn't remember otherwise, you've got it on your phone and you can just quickly look it up. We also track how long he sleeps for and when he does things like when we give him like tummy time and time on his playmat, how long he actively plays with things. And also we track, I don't know if she's still doing this, but for a while at least she was tracking his nappy changes and what was going on there. And it basically just, it means that when you go to the doctors or whatever and they ask you, how's this been going? Or, you know, how many hours sleep has he been getting on average a night or whatever? You can kind of actually have some data there. Because when you're sleep deprived as a new parent, you're not going to remember all that stuff.
Yeah, otherwise. I was going to say, some people may be wondering, why would you need to track all these menial things that are so easy to remember? You would be so surprised at how difficult it is to remember all these things when you're, as a parent.
And then if you want to sort of, go in depth, you can look at graphs, like sleep graphs and stuff that sort of show, what the pattern is overall, like if they're getting more sleep over time or, all those kinds of things. So yeah, we found it useful. It does the task that it's meant to do and it does it well. And so if you have young children, baby age children, probably up to, I don't know, anywhere up to 12 months, I guess. I'm sure we won't keep tracking things forever because that would be creepy. But at this point in time, while we need to know for medical purposes and stuff, it's just really useful to have access to that kind of technology easily. So, yeah, check it out.
For sure. We had an app that was similar. I can't find it, but yeah, same thing of just, you know, tracking the poops and tracking, you know, how, when she fed and on which side she fed and, all that kind of stuff is, you know, it's helpful information for your pediatrician. And it's nice to just be able to go in and say, hey, here is like the schedule that we've kind of been following. And
yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. It's good. So if you're a parent, check out that app or the app that Derek's talking about that he can't remember.
Yeah. Which... I'm not going to guarantee that's in the show notes.
And post it.
I remember. I'm pretty sure I actually recommended this at one point, but it's Baby Time. It's like a nursing timer, baby scheduling, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah. Cool. So check those out. Awesome Baby Tracker and Baby Time. And that's a wrap on Tech You Should Use.
Oh, and for the listeners out there, if you have a Tech You Should Use that you think that we should talk about or that we should check out, feel free to email us at ask@techreformation.com or send us an audio comment. Record yourself talking into your phone. You know, try to keep it fairly concise. You can keep it like 2 or 3 minutes or something like that. Or however long you need. If it's too long, we won't use it.
2 or 3 minutes. That's a long time.
Well, yeah, but you gotta describe the whatever it is they're talking about. So give them a little bit of time.
That's true. You're talking about for Tech You Should Use.
Yeah, for Tech You Should Use. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if that's something that you're interested in, if you have a piece of technology that you're just burning to tell us about, email us in an audio file and we'll check it out and maybe we'll use it in a future episode. This week's episode of Tech Reformation is brought to you by Olive Tree, the Bible study software that is a la carte, and you can get it for free and buy resources as you get it. We've talked about this a lot before, so you know the drill. There's some excellent software that goes across all your devices. You can download that software for free. You can get some free resources from the website without having to pay a dime. Or you can start buying, you know, translations and commentaries and all, even just like normal, literature on Olive Tree and collect that all in, and you can compare them side by side, all that stuff. But now I just realized these guys have gift cards. So if you have a friend who, is kind of interested in theology that you're like, well, I should start helping them build their library. You can totally help them build their library, not by shoving their bookshelves full of books. If that's their thing, well, by all means, go for it. But you can help build their digital library by giving them a gift card. Christmas is coming up here, another couple of months. It's a great little gift. You can get it for as much as you want. I'm guessing our code does not apply to that, but as always, you can always buy literature yourself from Olive Tree for 20% off using our gift code TECH, but these gift cards are a fantastic gift idea. I highly recommend you check them out. Anyway, thank you to Olive Tree for sponsoring this week's episode of Tech Reformation.
Leaving the 99 and searching the one. This is Kevin with the Hope for the Journey podcast, and we have a message for you. You are not alone. Whether you're a parent or a pastor, if you're dealing with a prodigal, you are not alone. Join Nick, David, and I as each week we discuss those feelings you're feeling, the fear, the doubt, the guilt, the questions, the temptation not to ask for prayer this week because you've asked every week beforehand and you're starting to feel needy, and the begging God, I believe, but help my unbelief. Whether it's discussing my personal journey parenting a child with drug addiction or pastors we interview who are doing creative ministry to the prodigals in the far country, we try to discuss this difficult topic with a little bit of levity and a lot of hope, giving parents hope for their journey and encouraging churches to remind people that he is faithful. When the whole earth shakes, I'm
For Theology from the Headlines this week, I have a new story from The Verge. The title is Facebook Still Has a Nipple Problem. And no, I didn't pick this. I didn't pick this news story just for the clickbait. Although I have to admit I was intrigued upon that title. But here's the gist of it. I'm going to read a few quotes from the article. Facebook has come under criticism for censoring a news article on mammograms due to an image of a woman's exposed breast. The company apologized for removing the post and restored it late Tuesday, though the incident adds to an ongoing controversy over a moderation policy that some have described as sexist. Facebook's community standards prohibit users from posting nude photos or sexually explicit content, though the site says it makes exceptions for photos of women actively engaged in breastfeeding or showing breasts with post-mastectomy scarring. Facebook has faced criticism in recent years for aggressively enforcing its nudity policy, which has been used to censor paintings, awareness campaigns, and most recently, an iconic Vietnam War photo. The site briefly removed an image of a woman undergoing a mammogram in 2015 before restoring it and issuing an apology. Les Décodeurs, which is French and I have no idea if I pronounced that correctly, reposted an article to its page on Tuesday afternoon, replacing the previous photo with an image of a man's bare torso. A blurb overlaying the photo explains that after Facebook censored the original image, the website replaced it with an image of a nude torso of a man, which itself does not obviously violate the site's terms of service. And so someone commented, Jillian York, director for International Freedom of Expression at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, commented that Facebook's reporting tools conflate nudity with sexuality. She added that the social network only prompts users to say whether an offending post contains nudity or pornography. York herself was banned from Facebook for 24 hours earlier this year for posting an image from a German campaign on breast cancer awareness, which used photos of bare-breasted women to encourage self-checking. It may be reasonable of Facebook to, for example, ban pornography, but I await the company's justification for specifically banning female nipples, particularly in non-sexual contexts, York said. Imposing a blanket ban on nudity, even if a handful of exceptions are carved out, furthers the idea that women's bodies are inherently sexual. So the idea is that people are getting upset at Facebook for banning women's breasts that are posted in a what they would call a non-sexual way. And Craig, I imagine you have some thoughts on this. Would you care to chime in?
I don't actually have any thoughts on this.
None at all? Oh, dang it. This is going to be a short one.
I'm kidding. I just wanted to see what Derek would say because we already had a brief chat about it earlier in the week. I think this is a hard one in some ways and a really easy one in mm-hmm. others. The first thing I think I should say is hashtag explicit.
Oh, yes. I should have said that first.
Because this episode is probably not, I don't know, it shouldn't be too bad, but we're going to be talking about nudity and things like that. So
talking about nipples.
Yeah. Use your discretion. And so the reason I say it's a hard one is because you mentioned the Vietnam War photo, which mm-hmm. is a very, very famous photo of a girl. I think she's running away from a napalm bomb explosion.
Mm-hmm. Something
I think
like
is
that.
The story. And so she has no clothes on. I think she's 10 years old or 12 or 13 or something like that, quite young. Mm-hmm. And the look of sort of horror on her face has become, and sadness, I guess, has become an iconic, that is an iconic image worldwide for the tragedy and the seriousness, I guess, of war. And and I think it's an image that has served a purpose. It's ingrained in a lot of people's minds, just the look, mainly the look on her face. There's other stuff going on in the picture. There's other people around the edges walking along the road or running along the road trying to get away as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that look of how could this happen, that like the shock and the terror and the fear in her face
and the utter helplessness that I think the entire
is actually Yeah, it's actually important for people to see that and to realize that when we go, oh, you know, we just need to bomb ISIS or we just need to bomb so-and-so, you know, like, we, you know, when people talk about fixing a problem with war, I'm not saying they take it lightly, but you got to realize that any time that happens, things like this happen. Mm-hmm. People get caught up in the crossfire, mm-hmm. Who have nothing to do with the conflict directly. You know,
yeah.
They're just. It's the same thing as all the pictures we're seeing come out of Syria of children dead in piles of rubble and stuff like that. It's just horrific. Yeah.
I mean, we need to know that the real world exists out there. That this is real, like the horrors that are happening out there outside of our cozy, you know, couches while we watch Netflix. Like, we need to understand the shock of the real world sometimes.
And there is nothing, I would say, safely say, that there is nothing sexual about that image.
Mm-hmm.
It's not meant to, like, it's not, I wouldn't put it in the category of pornography. I would say that it's not an image that everyone will find useful to look at. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some people, just shouldn't be looking at nudity full stop. Mm-hmm. But I think, I would find an image like that where it's like a historical record and it's serving a clear purpose of portraying war as a horrific event. That's the area where I kind of, it becomes a bit of a gray zone for me. And I go, well, I don't know that I'd necessarily be putting a blanket ban on that image, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, with other images that depict nudity, I think that I'm okay with Facebook removing full shots of women's breasts, for example, because of the fact that, and I want to start by saying it's not the fault of the women. Like, it's it's got nothing to do with, you know, yes, women's bodies are not evil. Women's bodies are made by God and they're made, you know, beautiful in the way he created mm-hmm. them and perfect and whatever. Well, not perfect. Nothing's perfect. But, you know, right. God created them and God created things good. Yes. So, the body is not an evil thing is what I'm trying to say there.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think in the fallen world that we live in, the temptation, particularly, I guess, for men, the temptation to lust is a dangerous mm-hmm. one. Now, some people feel that stronger than others, and that's, you know, if you don't struggle in that area, then that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, then coming across something like this on Facebook, while not pornographic in a, you know, it's not a
sexually charged picture, yeah,
but it is an image of female nudity, and therefore has the potential, I guess, to spark lust in the individual looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I that's kind of where I would say, you know, on Facebook, which is kind of a general social media platform, it's reporting news and interesting stories and it's sort of sharing information. Certainly important to put out the message about breast cancer awareness, but I don't know that it requires, and I don't think it's wise necessarily to use female nudity as the medium to do that.
Right.
I think there are other ways you could do that are powerful, that aren't as likely to lead people, you know, or not to lead people, but to sort of play into people's temptations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to get into the topic of why breasts are different than anything else. Like, there's a huge difference. Okay, I've been addicted to pornography. I've watched pornography. I understand that world. I go and look at this picture of a person in a mammogram, which is possibly the least sexy picture you could ever take of a woman's breasts. And I do wonder if people have a point with stigmatizing the female body as something that is exclusively sexual. And I wonder if that feeds into the narrative that men cannot help but lust after women's bodies. And this is something that I have a pretty big problem with. Like, there's, you know, the modesty movement that happened, I don't know when it happened. It happened when I was growing up anyway. You know, the whole, What was the, who were the guys, the Harris, like, brothers that did like Do Hard Things and...
Yeah, Josh Harris.
Mm-hmm. Those kind
Joshua
of...
Joshua Harris?
Joshua, well, actually his brothers. I think his younger brothers.
Like I Kissed Dating Goodbye? Is that the one?
Well, that's not, that doesn't have to deal with like the modesty issue or pornography or...
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, yeah. There was the narrative that... Or no, wait, actually, Do Hard... I never actually read Do Hard Things, so scratch that. But anyway, the narrative was that women need to cover up, or women need to police their own modesty to be sure not to let Christian brothers stumble, right? So they're using the passage in... I forget where it is. But the whole idea of not causing a brother to stumble is very important. Well... Yeah, okay, I can understand that. But that creates an impossible standard for women to uphold, because men have wildly differing views on what causes them to stumble. Like, there needs to be responsibility on the man's part, too. The man has to be responsible for his own thoughts, how he thinks about people. And... this is something that I transferred over into as I battled out of porn, like realizing that, no, I am absolutely responsible for the way that I look at women. I do not fall based on them. I fall based on my own sinful nature. And I can fight back against that through the power of the Holy Spirit. And that's something that's really, really important. I wonder if it wouldn't be a good idea to have more breasts about the world. This is going to sound so weird. To have more breasts. Oh, I hope I'm not digging my own grave here. To have more breasts.
I think the rugged marriage, you're going to have something to say about this episode.
Yeah, we'll see. To have more breasts around the world for men to learn to control themselves. It is possible to control yourself after having a raging pornography addiction. That's absolutely possible, but it takes work.
It is.
And it takes responsibility.
It is, yeah. And it takes, like you said, a reliance on the Holy Spirit. Because...
Well, it can even be common grace.
Sorry, go ahead.
Like, there are people out there who are... not Christians, who are not religious. I think it's what stopped the new drug. It's not explicitly a religious site, but there are a lot of you know, atheists that are like, porn is terrible for you. Don't do porn.
Yeah.
And they see pragmatically the problems with that, and they can control themselves, you know, without, you know, religion explicitly, which gets into... I just wanted to say that much too.
Yeah, although I guess trying to kill sin without God killing the sin on your behalf, mm-hmm. I think is a somewhat futile exercise. Like, I think you'll be able to kill sin to an extent, but maybe not fully, or maybe only temporarily. And I'm not saying that if you become a Christian and you rely on the Holy Spirit to help you with that process of sanctification, or to be the one who's powering the sanctification. Would be a more accurate way to do it. Then I'm not saying that as a Christian you won't sin at all. Like, that's, we know that we continue to fall short. But what I'm saying, like, is that I hear what you're saying, that there are people who aren't believers who can recognize that something is bad and try not to do the bad thing because they recognize it's bad. And that's great. So, yes, maybe you could call that common grace. But I wonder if for those people, the temptation is perhaps still knocking at the door and I guess there's less incentive for them to keep running from it, if that makes sense. Whereas if the Spirit's indwelling you and continually convicting you of what is right and what is not right in that way, then I think... I don't know. I personally have found that that's, you know, that's a helpful thing to sort of think about in terms of, you know, if I really love God, if Jesus is what I treasure most, then I shouldn't want to be doing that thing that I used to want to do. Does that make sense? That kind of thought process I find has been helpful. I agree with you, though, in totally on the idea that men are responsible for their actions. It's not a female's fault if a man looks at her lustfully necessarily. Now, it can be if a female dresses provocatively intentionally, then that can be a problem, and that is possible for women to do that. But in a general situation, if a woman's just walking down the street wearing clothes that aren't lingerie sort of thing, like she's just wearing normal clothes, and a guy's lusting after her, that's not her fault, that's his fault. And I don't think men should be able to say, you need to cover up this much of your arm or else I will definitely lust after you. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think that's what you were sort of talking about, that cover up movement of, girls need to do everything in their power to not have skin visible so that men won't lust after them. And I think you're right. There are some issues with that. When in the Slack, when we were chatting about this, I said, I think for anyone who's struggled with porn or with lust in that sort of way, I think it may be useful to learn to be around breastfeeding women, because there's nothing sexual about breastfeeding. And in fact, it's normal. It's where most of us started our lives in terms of, eating. And it's super awkward as a guy when it's not your wife who's breastfeeding. It can be super awkward if you're not used to it, I guess is what I'm saying. I know I certainly found it awkward, and maybe I shouldn't have, but I did early on when I was a bit younger. But over time, I've kind of reminded myself that this is not a sexual thing. This is a biological thing, and it's important, and it's beautiful that it was made to be that way, and all that sort of thing. So I think that's a good way to kind of train your brain to think about women's bodies differently. Like, they're not just, like you were saying, sexual all the time for all purposes. But to encourage, when someone's breastfeeding in the room with you, you don't intentionally look at what they're doing there. I wouldn't, if it wasn't my wife, I wouldn't be watching. I'd be just talking or whatever, being part of the conversation, and not being weirded out by that. Because again, if you are weirded out by that, then maybe it is kind of, displaying that you don't realize that women's bodies are, mm-hmm. Actually their bodies, and they're not necessarily, something that's either there to make you lust or make you feel awkward. But at the same time, I think, particularly when things shift to an online situation, and people are, in their bedrooms or whatever, scrolling through their Facebook feed, to have, or Instagram, if that picture campaign or whatever it was, mm-hmm. To just have nudity on display as like a form of advertising for a cause or something like that, I just think is probably unhelpful. And even with mammograms, like you said, mammograms aren't a sexual situation. Mm-hmm. But to see full nakedness, something I said in the Slack is, I think there's relevance to the fact that God gave Adam and Eve clothes to cover themselves up once they had sinned. Mm-hmm. And so not to sort of weirdly eisegete that into the 21st century or anything like that, but I think just from like what's helpful and what's not for those men who do struggle with lust, and let's be honest, mm-hmm. it's a high percentage. Okay, we're not talking about 2% of men struggle with lust or pornography. I think we could probably safely say that it's a relatively high percentage, which is sad. And so I think we need to be, as Christians in particular, we need to be vigilant about minimizing the exposure and maximizing the resistance to temptation. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean putting all the emphasis on what the women need to do to help us as men. It does mean taking responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm saying is there are things that other people can do in the way that they portray things that can help or hinder mm-hmm. That process of trying to kill that sin. And I think something like this, where it's just kind of displaying nudity, to the world online, where it's very easy for them, once they've seen that, if that does grab their attention, to then click to a new tab and start going off somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? So I just see it as, it's not an, you know, the actual, the female body is not an evil thing. It shouldn't be an entirely sexual thing every time, you know, in every context. But I also think when it comes to online images of nudity, then personally, my standpoint would be that it's not a helpful thing to be coming across in your average Facebook feed or whatever. Yeah. So, if you're a doctor, for example, and you need to do a paper on breast cancer or something, and you need to use images, then you're going to have to train yourself not to lust after those images and realize that they're medical. You know, I think probably most doctors have a handle on that. And, you know, this is a medical situation. And so we're dealing with, like you said, a pragmatic approach to fixing a problem with the body rather than lusting after a particular part of the body or something. So, yeah, I think that's why, for me, it's a little bit of a gray. Like, there's a gray area on one hand with the Vietnam War photo, but on the other hand with the mammogram thing, I just think there's other ways they could do it, and it would probably be better to do it in those other ways.
And I think, and we have to realize that nudity itself is not the sin here. Actually, you brought up Adam and Eve. I found a quote from Gill's exposition of the entire Bible that commented on that, saying that this also was not the true reason. He was naked from his creation as to his body, and it caused no shame in him nor any dread to appear before God. He conceals the true cause, which was sin, that made the nakedness of his body shameful and had stripped his soul of its native clothing, purity, and holiness. And therefore it was he could not appear before a pure and holy being.
Yeah.
And so it's sin that this all comes back around to. And I do want to say also that our society is increasingly going towards freeing the nipple. If you've seen that hashtag.
I have heard of it, yeah.
And this will certainly pop up more and more as we go through life, that the female breast is not going to be seen as something that needs to be covered in the next, you know, 30 to 40 years, most likely, just because society is changing that way. And I would encourage to do less of the social... I don't know, like I don't know that social campaigning for this is terribly useful, because we come off presenting a new law that the Lord has not given, as opposed to wanting to help others be wise in presenting themselves. I would instead recommend a focus on, you know, on our own hearts and working out how to be in the world and not of the world, and kill our own sin as opposed to killing others. Cause this is going to keep popping up for sure.
So it is a hard one.
Yeah.
Cause I think, I guess what you just said then about like killing our own sin, I guess my fear would be that people would take that and apply that to other things and say, well, you know, we don't need to tell people that the redefinition of marriage is wrong. We just need to make sure our marriage is right.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Before God. And I would say, you know, well, the quick answer to that is, well, no, God has given the standard for marriage in the Bible, and therefore we can, with clarity and authority, say something is marriage and something else is not marriage. And I guess on this issue, the question really is, has God given a standard for what is likely to lead people to lust? Or I guess,
is there like a base level of modesty that is commanded by scripture?
That's right. And maybe the base level of modesty isn't explicit, pun intended, or sort of semi-intended. Maybe I wonder if that, I guess what I'm trying to work out is that base level of modesty sort of inferred in the seriousness with which sexual immorality and sexual sin is talked about in the Bible, and particularly in the New Testament, like the pastoral epistles and stuff. I think it's in the epistles. Anyway, it's fairly clearly talked about all through the New Testament. Whenever sexual immorality is mentioned, it's definitely mentioned in negative terms, like as something that is very serious. Yeah. All sin is serious mm-hmm. before God, but it's like a, you know, you're sinning against your own body type thing. And so from that, you know, just the weight that is given to it, I wonder if we should infer from that some kind of extra level of vigilance because of the seriousness of that sin or the fact that it's so internal. I don't know. That's a difficult one. Because as soon as you start to do that, then you will probably end up with people going down the imposing modesty on, you know, forcing women to be modest, and then you end up with burkas and things like that. Do you know what I mean? If you take it to its full extent.
Yeah, we don't want to legislate modesty necessarily.
No. But I guess there's a thing as Christians of encouraging what is helpful and discouraging what is unhelpful. And that's kind of where I guess that's where I'd try to land on it. So for men, encouraging what is helpful means, recognize sin that's in your life in this area. Recognize that you have a responsibility to work on that, to work on killing that and to repent of that and to turn away from it. And in terms of women doing what's helpful, there are things that they can be doing that don't necessarily restrict them completely, but do help out other people. And it's so hard because you want your wife to have freedom and to feel like she can wear clothes without having to go, is this too long or is this too short or is this too this or that? Mm-hmm. You don't want her to have to worry because of someone else, but you also don't want your neighbor to be struggling with sin because of your wife. Like, neither of those things are a good situation.
Yeah, that, I mean, we've had, my wife and I have, and I know we're going long, but
And I'm not talking about your wife specifically, I'm talking about your universal, like everyone.
Yeah, I understand. Well, and I mean, I've had that conversation with my wife many times of, hey, does this cover up enough? You know, is this appropriate? And most of the time, like, she would have grown up very, very conservative and would have been very much in that vein of, you must watch out for your Christian brothers in everything that you wear, and almost to a point that it's unhealthy and a little bit crippling that you can't wear, you know, super nice things without worrying that men are going to start lusting after you. And I've tried to break her of that somewhat because I am so much in the camp of, men are responsible for their own thoughts. We do have a limit, but I do admit that it's arbitrary and it's kind of dictated by the culture, because each culture kind of dictates their own modesty. I mean, there's people in Africa that walk around naked all the time with a necklace, and that necklace means that, like, and the necklace is like the clothing that is adequate to be like, I am not naked sexually, or whatever. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
which is so strange, but cultures change these kinds of things, and I just want to make sure we don't get too freaked out about our culture changing standards of modesty and clinging to a law that doesn't exist. You know, anyway, interesting subject.
Can we just quickly go to that Romans passage?
Yes.
So I'll just read it. It says, "Therefore, let us not pass judgment on one another any longer, but rather decide never to put a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of a brother. I know and am persuaded in the Lord Jesus that nothing is unclean in itself, but it is unclean for anyone who thinks it unclean. For if your brother is grieved by what you eat, you are no longer walking in love. By what you eat, do not destroy the one for whom Christ died. So do not let what you regard as good be spoken of as evil, for the kingdom of God is not a matter of eating and drinking, but of righteousness and peace and joy in the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. Whoever thus serves Christ is acceptable to God and approved by men, so let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding." And so it goes on and says, "Everything is indeed clean, but it is wrong for anyone to make another stumble by what he eats." Mm-hmm. So this is talking about like, cleanliness of food and things like that, which is slightly different. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's where you're saying there's no explicit, in that passage, there's no explicit morality code that's being given.
Yeah. Well, at this, I mean...
But the principle, I guess, is what we're saying, you know, I'm saying the principle could still apply. It's just how do we, like you said, it's the way in which we apply that principle so as not to make it that the onus becomes on the woman to avoid temptation for the man.
Right.
You know, the onus needs to be as much, if probably more, on the man. Mm-hmm. And the woman just needs to be conscious of the fact that we do live in a culture where men are, women, you know, can be conscious of the fact that we live in a culture where men are exposed to a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of advertising is geared towards it. And let's be honest, women's advertising is too, you know. People will sell, there'll be underwear ads with men in nothing but underwear on big billboards and stuff. So women get advertised too with sexual imagery as well, or at least nakedness and exposed bodies. So it's kind of everyone needs to just be aware that we live in a culture that is throwing this stuff at us, and therefore, particularly for those who do struggle with it and struggle to separate the contexts, maybe, you know, so if you struggle with going, well, that's medical and that's biological and that's sexual, if you sort of know in your own heart that you can't, that those lines don't really exist for you and it all just kind of blurs into the sexual category, then maybe that's something that you need to be even more aware of and therefore be more willing to sort of turn from and try to I don't know, like ask God to keep sanctifying you in that area.
Exactly.
And really just be aware of where you struggle so that you can try and work through with God rather than projecting it onto everyone else around you.
Good talk. So, you got any recos, Craig?
I do. It's another music reco. I seem to be doing music and apps a lot lately.
it's good stuff.
This one is from, this one's from the Village Church. Well, it's easy for people to, you know, people can download it from wherever they are and all that sort of thing. If I was recommending stuff in my city, you'd have to all fly to South Australia, and that's expensive.
I recommend looking at kangaroos in person.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend a kids album from the Village Church. It's called Jesus Came to Save Sinners. It's actually an EP, so there's only five songs. Okay. But I don't know. My son's only 4.5 months old, and he loves music. So if he's crying or something in the car and we put music on, which is not the only way we soothe our child, believe me, but every now and then we'll just turn the radio on or turn our iPod on, and he just kind of most of the time instantly changes and goes, ooh. There's music. I like music.
That's great.
He just kind of chills out and sometimes tries to sing along. Yesterday he was trying to sing, which was pretty cute.
It's awesome when that happens.
And so this album is geared towards kids. Solid lyrics, but easy to learn and sing along to. So my son isn't at the talking stage yet, but I'm pretty sure when he is, he'll find these ones easy to pick up. So the Village Church, Jesus Came to Save Sinners EP.
Great. And my reco this week would be to check out my wife's newest entrepreneurial venture called In Our Treehouse. She makes these adorable little bibs for Rainy, as well as like pacifier clips, like lanyards type of stuff, and a couple other little things. And we keep giving these to people for like baby shower presents, and people absolutely love them and keep telling us like you should sell these, and so Tanya's selling them now. So
cool.
I don't know about people outside the US, but certainly if you're inside the continental US, we will ship stuff to you for free if you buy it. But yeah, go check out we have a Facebook page with some pictures of some stuff, and if you like any of it, you know, hit us up, we'll get you some sweet baby swag.
Sounds good.
If you would like to contact us, you can connect with us in the Slack team. Is that the verbiology that Ben uses? Slack team? Yes.
Correct. Yep.
It's the Slack team, and there are channels inside the Slack team that with different topics, whether it be politics or music or tech or just episode discussion. Tell us what you think about this episode. In the episode discussion, we would love to hear your thoughts. But you can go join the Slack at slack.techreformation.com.
And you can visit our website at techreformation.com to search for past shows and topics.
We're a part of the Theology Mix Network. You can check us out there either on the website, which is linked in the show notes, or on the Master iTunes feed, which is also linked in the show notes. Review us on iTunes, recommend us on Overcast. Those things really help us get out there and get known by other people. Share us with a friend that you think might enjoy us. The music that you're hearing is used by special permission of Matthew Parker. Check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.